Hi, everyone. Welcome to Nancy's Metaphysical World and More. My name's Nancy. I host the show, and tonight I have a great guest. I'm very excited about having him on because this is one of the topics that I really like to talk about a lot. His name is William Puckett. So, William, welcome to the show.
Thank you, Nancy. Yes, UFOs are a wonderful topic, something that I could talk about all day long.
Good, because we're going to talk about them a lot, and we're going to kind of break maybe some of the myths that people have, or some of maybe the lies that have been kind of told to people as of late and through most of history. But first, William, before we do that, I'd really like for you to explain to my listeners a little bit about who you are. What caused you to become a UFO person?
Well, I'm a retired scientist from the federal government by education. I'm a meteorologist. I grew up in the 1950s when UFOs were on the headlines in the national news, and kind of developed an interest then, and then my interest just sort of waned until the mid-1970s when I first started working for the federal government. I started reading books about UFOs, and at that time, Project Blue Book had been declassified, which was the 22-year study by the U.S. Air Force, and conclusive that UFOs were not a threat to national security, so they abandoned that study in 1969. But I was interested after I read that book, I found that about 800 sightings were unidentified, and said, well, you only need one. So then in the 1980s, when UFO documentaries started making, like the History Channel and Learning Channel and Unsolved Mysteries, I saw a lot of researchers working on the UFO phenomenon, and I said, I can do that. So I had my own curiosity, and about 5 years ago, I started my website, which is www.ufosnw.com. Call myself UFOs Northwest. I'm nonprofit. I advertise and collect sighting reports, analyze them, and put them on my site. I'm also a research consultant for NARCAP, which is an organization that investigates aerial phenomena. They use the word UAP. Unidentified aerial phenomena rather than the word UFO. I'm a member of the Mutual UFO Network titled MUFON. I am also a researcher for MUFON, and I've done quite a bit of work on the Stevensville, Texas studies. I spoke at the International UFO Symposium this year regarding my radar analysis of the Stevensville sightings. Ironically enough, I've really never had my own sighting. So that kind of explains, highlights my UFO experience.
What I find really interesting is that our government makes out all these blanket statements that there's no such things as UFOs. You know, everything that's out there that people think are UFOs, we've cut it down. We know what it is. Roswell is not true. Area 51 is not true. There's not sightings here. There's not sightings there. Now, to me, and to probably most of my listeners, William, we all know that our government is trying to hide some of these facts. But why do you think they're trying to hide the facts that, yes, they do exist, yes, we do have whatever? Why did they do that?
Well, that's a good question, you know, and I guess only the government knows that. My take on that is, of course, here a few days ago on Halloween was the 70th anniversary of the War of the Worlds, where Orson Welles got on the radio and frightened a number of listeners, inadvertently, of course. That's kind of a long story because people tuned into the program late and didn't hear the disclaimers, and that spooked the public. And then there was a study done around 1960 under a contract from NASA, and it was done by a government think tank. I think it was a RAND Corporation. The name of the company now slips my mind, but they concluded that if the public knew or was in contact with extraterrestrial intelligence, that it would lead to a collapse of financial markets, which we're already seeing right now, and that's just over a few bad mortgages, and not only in the United States but around the world. And that's what they concluded would happen if we came in contact with extraterrestrial intelligence. It would cause massive problems in religions, organized religions. And so they concluded that it would be pretty risky if the public knew about UFOs. So that's one of the reasons. Another one is possibly is, you know, if we have this, some of this technology or access to it, we don't want our enemies to know about it. And, you know, if we're not in control of the skies, we don't want the public to know about it. And now, the problem with the U.S. government versus other governments, we have a lot of agencies in the government, and I think 8 to 10, maybe more agencies have UFO information. So, and these agencies don't necessarily communicate. If you have a high level of secrecy in one agency, that secrecy isn't going to transfer to another agency. For example, if the Defense Intelligence Agency, a level 30, which is fairly high, knows something, that isn't going to be communicated to a level 30 in the CIA. Conversely, the British Ministry of Defense, they're one agency, and they have most of the UFO information in England. And, of course, as you've probably heard, they've been releasing a lot of that information. Mm-hmm. Remains to be seen how much more they haven't released. So that's my opinion on why the government holds on to it. You know, it remains to be seen how much they know. Definitely they know a lot more than we know. How many crashes they've got? Do they have alien bodies? I mean, I'd be speculating on that. I mean, I have interviewed a lot of military witnesses that have been privy to really remarkable sightings at nuclear installations, and they talked about being debriefed by, they call them the spooks, and not the men in black, but the spooks. And they were brutal in their debriefing. I mean, these guys were threatened with and a number of other things. So that's my opinion on why the government holds on to this.
The spooks, as they call them, the men in black, have you ever had to deal with them or have seen them?
No. I have not had any contact with them. You know, nobody really knows who they are. Some researchers that I talked to think that they're CIA. Others think that, you know, they could be actual extraterrestrials. I really don't know. I know I've heard enough about them to know that they exist, and they drive black cars and, you know, that type of thing. But I really don't know, you know, I've not had any contact with them. I've never had any problems with, you know, any of the analyses I've done. The only problems that I've had is getting information from a government. I mean, I've written a lot of freedom of information requests. I've had, as of recent, some difficulty getting some stuff from the FBI and also NASA. But I don't want to sit on the air here and run down our government. I mean, I have to commend the FBI for really protecting us from terrorism. And it's just that I've asked them for some, simply what the conclusion was on a, you know, some incidents. And they just told me they didn't have any records, so they're not saying anything about it. But I've never had any contact with any, so to speak, subversive government agents or agencies.
There was a pretty impressive sighting done in Cornwall, England, because it was all over the Discovery Channel about what the people saw in England. Does any one country that you know of have more sightings in them?
Well, in my with my experiences, the United States does, but that's biased because I do most of my advertising for websites, United States. Now, other sites or other countries like England, yes, England does have a lot of sightings. They definitely do. But as to any one country, I really don't know. I mean, the problem is, scientifically, it's not like you go out and you take a, I suppose you could do that. I mean, you could go out and take a poll of people that have seen UFOs, sort of a random statistical poll. But, you know, I don't think that's been done. There's been polls taken that poll people that believe in UFOs or have sighted UFOs in the United States. So I really don't know the answer to that question. But, yes, England does have a lot of sightings. And I see those. I get this publication called UFO News Clipping Service, and they get newspaper articles and they send that out every month, and a good bulk of those cases come from England. Very good cases. And I've had some remarkable cases of my own from England. Now, the Cornwall sighting, I'm not sure if that's the sighting where they took the videos and there were several people outside the pub, and I suppose obviously some of them had been drinking, but, you know, there were a lot of people that saw these lights, and the video that I saw looked pretty compelling. I think that was a Cornwall sighting, but mm-hmm. I don't know that with 100% certainty.
In the United States, on your website, let's give it out again. It's UFOSNorthwest.com.
NW.com, yeah.
I'm sorry, NW.com. It's important to go there. I mean, you have a ton of history on this. You have clips, you have audios, you have pilots talking. I mean, you have a lot of very, very compelling topics here, and you back it with, you know, a lot of information.
Right.
So, you know, everybody who's listening, if you'd like to call and ask a question, we can maybe do that, but not a question for a psychic, not for me. This would be a question to talk about a UFO or if you've seen one or anything like that. It would be interesting to hear your take on it. But in the meantime, while we're talking, if you can, go to the website and take a look at it. I looked at the pictures that you have up there. There are some really pretty good pictures there that make it hard to think that there could not possibly be anything out there other than us.
That's right. I just got some interesting pictures yesterday that I put up there last night of dark triangles. This was taken in Ogden, Utah, not too far from Hill Air Force Base, and I analyzed those photos, and I don't see any tethers, any strings on it. I don't think they were kites. There were several people pulled off the side of the highway looking at this thing. It was east of the highway, whereas Hill Air Force Base is west of the highway, and I don't know what it was. This is a third group of photos I've seen in the past year of these dark triangles. And in every case, they're silent, they move slowly, they can speed up rapidly, and, you know, whatever they are, whether they're ET or reverse ET technology used by our government, I don't know, but you know, these are interesting, and I get a lot of triangles reports. A bulk of them are flying discs, and a high percentage of them are flying triangles.
See, and, you know, a lot of times people talk about, you know, a disc in the sky, and it doesn't make any noise, and there really isn't, the lights are not blinking on it. And, I mean, people come up with a lot of the same information no matter where they're located in the world, basically. You know, which, again, I find kind of interesting because I know people have a great imagination, don't get me wrong. But to me, there is no possible way that any people who have, I can't say it like that, if there's any people out there who believe that we could be the only humans or anything like us in this whole universe, I mean, they really need to take a look at this website because there's a lot of very fascinating information that I think they would really have a hard time, you know, trying to debunk, you know. So, again, it's UFOSNW.com. Now, you also have a thing on here about abductions that have gone on.
I'm sorry, I didn't hear you. Could you repeat that, please?
Yes, I said you also on your website you have some information about abductions that have happened.
Right.
So can you maybe tell our listeners it, because there's certain things that happen if somebody is actually being abducted. So can you give people a little idea at somebody who's been abducted, what happens to them as far as like what you've got here on your website?
I don't get a percentage-wise a lot of abduction cases, and of course they're very difficult to investigate, but I have had a number of missing time cases and even teleportation cases. I've been investigating one that occurred in Illinois about 20-some years ago. And, you know, what we look for, of course, is missing time, flashbacks, and other things. But the problem with abduction cases is that the physical evidence, you know, the real hardcore scientific evidence is lacking. I do believe people. I've had some abductees interviewed by psychologists, and most of them are mentally sound, and some of them are quite traumatized by their experiences. I know a person, and this isn't on my website, a very well-respected researcher who heads a national UFO organization. I won't specify which one. And he had a dramatic sighting about 15 years ago where they actually was in Oakland, California, and the object was transparent. It was so dramatic that the three people in the car, himself and two other people, are still being treated to this day for PTSD because of the dramatic experience. And it affected him so much that he started a UFO organization, scientific UFO organization. So, you know, to bottom line it, it's difficult with abduction cases to really say anything definitive about them. I believe people. I really don't know if they're all extraterrestrial or higher dimensional. Some of the teleportation cases have been really compelling. You know, people get transported 500 miles and wake up 2 days later and their gas tank is full and, you know, they don't know how they got there. And, you know, those cases defy explanation, some of them. And, like I say, I've had some of these people interviewed by professionals. And, for the most part, they're a sound mind. And, you know, what this really is, you know, it's difficult to say. One thing that I'll say to your listeners is that I do believe that a small percentage of UFO sightings that I get are extraterrestrial visitors. However, I will say that I do not have complete scientific proof to say that that's the case. I believe some of them are extraterrestrial, but when you come down to scientific evidence, you know, it's probably lacking. You know, it's, of course, we say an eyewitness testimony can send a person to the death chamber, but when in the field of science, you need more than that. And, however, I do believe that UFOs should be studied scientifically, and there should be a lot of money allocated in that direction. Instead, they're giving it to the SETI people. And maybe the SETI people will find something, but I really think that the funds are skewed. There's a lot of bias out there. And even the UFO, the abduction phenomenon itself, you know, MUFON has done a environmental study where they collected a lot of environmental data for abductee locations of abductees, and this data is being analyzed right now by a professional statistician. So, you know, I just think that there's a lot to be learned, and in my case, I'm non-profit, and I don't charge anything to anyone. I spend quite a bit of money collecting information, like under Freedom of Information Act. Anything I get from the government, I put on my website, you know, even my own letters I send to them. So that's kind of a long dissertation on abductions, but, you know, I don't have a high percentage of abduction cases, but I do get some, and I get some cases where people are quite conscious of entities in their presence. I mean, they're not. This is not being under hypnosis. This is, you know, right encounters. So that happens too.
Mm-hmm. My niece. There's a possibility that she had been abducted once. I'll tell you her story. And it's kind of strange, but she's my niece, so I mean, you know, I believe what she says. But she was out on a country road because she used to be in sales, and mm-hmm. a lot of cornfields all around, and kind of late, you know, like after 9 o'clock at night out way in southern Illinois. And for no apparent reason, her entire car went dead. No lights, no turning it on. It was like just the entire battery went dead. Mm-hmm. And she said she sat there and she tried to turn it on and off a few times. Then she kind of looked up and she saw this great big white light. And then that was the last thing that she remembered. And then when she came back from wherever or whatever happened, she didn't even notice the time, but she figured that something was different. So she tried to start the car again and it started right up. And then about two years after that, she had like something kept like bothering the inside of her nose. And it was, like, really, bothering her, like it would hurt or it would be kind of scratchy or whatever. So she kept, you know, trying to blow it and stuff, and she couldn't get anything out. So she took a Q-tip, actually, and was trying to, you know, scratch whatever was there. And she said a teeny little piece of metal actually fell out of her nose. And she has it saved, but it's at one of her friend's house, so she's going to give it for me, you know, get it for me. And when she does, I'm going to send it to you.
I appreciate that. I will get it analyzed by a professional chemist. I have access to chemistry, and I'll pay to have the analysis done. Yeah, I would like to hear, you know, more specifics on her story, if you could write it up or have her contact me via email. But, see, that's a very compelling case, mm-hmm. what you've just told me. Number one, you have electromagnetic or time distortion, the car turning off. Number two, you got missing time. And number three, you've got a sighting.
Mm-hmm.
And number four, you've got an artifact. You've got a physical, a piece of evidence. And, that is a very, from what you've just told me, that it sounds to me to be a very strong case. And I certainly would like to be involved in it.
Yeah, well, what I'll do is I will have her give you, you know, not a call, but I'll have her send you some information, you know,
okay.
by email.
Sure.
And then I'll give her your number, you know, in case she wants to give you a call. She doesn't
okay.
want a lot of people to know, but she was afraid people were going to say she's crazy. And her name is Tina. And I said, Tina, believe me, what you have just told me sounds like a true case of if you weren't abducted, at least they were, like, right there with you, okay?
Right, right.
So, you know, so she's a little touchy about the subject because it really scared her pretty bad, you know?
Well, rightly so. And one thing I'll tell your listeners, too, is, any witnesses that come to me, their confidentiality and anonymity is guaranteed. When I post a case on my site, I don't release any personal information. What I do sometimes, I might share information with other investigators. For example, if there's a case across the country and, you know, somebody saw a disc land in a field, I'll get in touch with the local MUFON director of that state to get somebody out there to look at it.
Mm-hmm.
But I don't disclose any witness information, unless some witnesses want their name out there. In that case, I'll put it out there. But unless they specifically tell me to, I don't.
Mm-hmm.
And actually, you know, when talking about physical evidence, I've got a potential landing case that happened in Texas about a month ago, and the gentleman got up in the middle of the night to go to the restroom, saw a huge bright light in the backyard, didn't think anything of it. The next morning they went out, kind of a rural area in Texas, fairly close to metropolitan Dallas-Fort Worth, but they went out and there was this black circle in their pasture. And they took samples of it. This happened around the 20th of September, and they tried to get a number of universities to analyze, and they wouldn't do it. So they called me, and I said, yeah, you send it to me, and I have a couple of chemists I can work with. And So I'm going to get those samples, and I'm going to have them analyzed, and, you know, maybe we'll find something. So, you know, there's a lot of data out there, and this is the stuff I like to get my hands on because I can say something more definitive, you know, if you have that. But the case of your niece, just based on what you've told me, sounds quite interesting. And, of course, you can tell her that I will honor her anonymity.
Okay. Yeah, because I know that she wants to talk about it. She wouldn't talk about it for a long, long time. You know, and then one night I was with her and we were just kind of talking in general, and I said, yeah, one of my things I'm going to be doing is starting to interview some UFO people. I said, and I can hardly wait because I think it's something the public, you know, whether they want to believe it or not, should at least hear about it. She goes, well, let me tell you what happened to me one night. And then that's when she started telling me the story. And she said, I don't know. I said, well, it sounds to me, Tina, like you're probably in the presence of a UFO and you just don't know it. And then she said, well, there's this piece of metal that fell out of my nose a couple years later. And she said, I have it saved, but I got to go over where it's stored at my girlfriend's house with some of my other stuff and see if I can find it. And I said, well, if you find it, give it to me. And, you know, we'll have it checked out for you. So she said, well, okay. So, you know, I will just, you know, give her your phone number and stuff and have her send you out an email, and then the two of you guys can talk. That way you'll get it firsthand.
Right. Yeah, I really look forward to that. And she can call me anytime. And that is a very interesting case and one that I would love to be involved in. This is the type of cases that we need. And, you know, all the things that happened in that particular incident, you know, any one of them in itself is, you know, some evidence. For example, the car turning off. Years ago, about 50 years ago, there was a case down in Loveland, Texas, which is in the Texas Panhandle. And I did a special study in that. People can go to my website in History of UFOs, and I got a lot of newspaper articles and Project Blue Book documents. All these sightings occurred down there, eastern New Mexico and Texas Panhandle. People's cars turned off, you know, and the Air Force said it was ball lightning. Well, there weren't any thunderstorms in the area. It was Texas in November, you know, and I remember that case. I'm dating myself, but it spooked the public. I mean, it was in the national news, you know, and people were really scared. But what I'm saying is that was just one thing, and your niece had three or four different things that happened at one time, which any one of which would be evidence enough to carry out an investigation. So,
a lot of sightings, William, are usually around an Air Force base of some sort, whether it's here in the United States or another country. Is that pretty much kind of true?
Yes, particularly nuclear facilities. You know, I've had a couple of cases from Whiteman Air Force Base, it's Knobnostra, Missouri, Central Missouri. Whiteman Air Force Base is home of the 509th Bomb Group, the same bomber group that was at Roswell and the Roswell sighting, alleged Roswell crash occurred in 1947. Mm-hmm. And they were the home of the B-2 bombers. At one time, all the B-2 bombers in the Strategic Air Command were at Whiteman. I've had two cases at Whiteman, about 10 years apart, where UFOs, those were given to me by security guards, buzzed the base, middle of the night, and they had what they call these igloos. There were 20 of them. In two of the igloos, there were nuclear weapons. This UFO moved over the base and was beaming light on these two igloos where the nuclear weapons were. How did it know where the nuclear weapons were? The only people that knew were a few security people. This thing went on all night long until finally the security command came out, took the security guards out of there, and they had huge lights, they had cameras out there, and they finally launched some aircraft after this thing and chased it out of there. The aircraft landed, the thing came back, and I've had other cases, Ellsworth Air Force Base, Rapid City, South Dakota, 1967. I've had three separate independent witnesses talk about the UFOs buzzing the Minuteman missiles silos. And in one case, an officer saw beans in a saucer, and he had three or four men under his command. This thing went right over the top of him. They chased him out of there with choppers. The next night, they came back. Out here at in Washington at Bangor Submarine Base, where there's nuclear weapons, there's been a lot of UFO activity. I mean, I could go on the rest of the night about that. Even on ships with nuclear weapons, there's been a lot of UFO activity. Why the interest, you know? The same thing with Maelstrom Air Force Base in Great Falls, Montana. They disabled 20 different missile installations, and those missile installations were independent electronically. And not only that, there were separate missiles silos in those installations. They all went down concurrently. That's never been explained. Boeing was a contractor. They went in after that, after the silos came up by themselves, after the UFOs left. They didn't find anything wrong. And, you know, if that's not a threat to national security, I would hate to see what was.
I would think so.
Great.
When they talk about the Roswell, and I know that they try to keep it all under wraps, mm-hmm. and they try to keep people away from Area 51. Do you know anything about Area 51 as to why they would want that so protected and kept such a big secret?
Well, I understand Area 51, sometimes it's called the ranch, sometimes it's called the Shady Rest, depending on who you talk to. I mean, they do test secret aircraft there. I mean, the stealth aircraft, the SR-71, the B-2 bombers were tested there, the U-2 spy plane. But, you know, I think they got far more sophisticated hardware than that out there. And so that in itself is one reason they'll keep it secret. But, you know, there's other, I do believe that, in my opinion, that they're reverse engineering extraterrestrial technology out there. They have been for a long time. And I'll tell you a little story about Area 51. It's not a story, it's true. It's something that's never been in the media too much. I worked for the Environmental Protection Agency for nearly 30 years. And in 1995, there was a lawsuit brought against the Air Force by some civilians that got sick. A couple of them died due to extinguishing of toxic waste at Area 51. So the EPA inspectors were going to go in there because we can litigate other federal agencies. EPA can. We've done it. And President Clinton signed an executive order that we could not go in there because of national security. That is the first time that the government, they had to acknowledge the existence of the base to keep us out of there. Before that, they never even acknowledged the base was there. And our lawyers, our meaning EPA, were going to use Soviet KGB satellite photos in court to litigate the case. But we had a hands-off order from President Clinton based on national security. We could not touch that. Whether that lawsuit ever got settled, you know, I don't know, but I've heard that there's other problems going on out there at Area 51, and allegedly some of the operations have been transferred to other bases. There's some underground radiation leaks from all the underground testing done in Nevada. Now, I've not heard that officially, but, you know, that there's been some problems out there, so there's not as many people out there. But again, that's anecdotal, you know. I've never heard anything official about it, but so that's that was when the government had to acknowledge the existence of Area 51. Roswell is another story. I mean, the government, you know, the Air Force has come out with two studies, most of which weren't even about 1947. I mean, I have both those reports at home here, and neither one of them really acknowledge anything about 1947. I mean, the Government Accounting Office did an audit under the direction of Congressman Stephen Schiff, who about 10 or 15 years ago, I don't recall exact time, was the congressional congressman from that district. He subsequently has passed away from cancer not too long after that. I don't think that was related, of course, to his asking for a GAO audit. The GAO came back. I mean, GAO has a lot of authority. They can go right into an agency's files and look, regardless of security. They have a lot of authority. But anyhow, they came back and said all records related to Roswell have been destroyed. So then the Air Force comes out with a study. How can they say what happened in 1947 when the records have been destroyed? They didn't. They talked about 1959. They talked about 1956. They talk about 1953. They don't know what happened in 1947. And based on the fact that all the records have been destroyed. So, you know, there's all these witnesses that come forward. Many of them come forward after the unsolved mystery airing of Roswell in 1988. But as of yet, I have never seen any physical evidence saying that, you know, the Roswell incident was a crash of an extraterrestrial spacecraft. I believe it was. Unfortunately, I couldn't find my photos. We talked about the photos I took down there. I visited this site, which is on private property, and saw the Arroyo, and they had the flags out there where the craft had crashed into this Arroyo, and it shows a carved-out area that, in my mind, looked quite unnatural. And then they had another flag on top of the Arroyo where allegedly one of the ETs was still alive. The other ones were dead. But, you know, exactly what happened in Roswell, probably we never will know. You know, there's been a lot of witnesses that come forward, some of them with quite high credibility. Recently, General Roger Ramey's wife, who's still alive, apparently told somebody else that, you know, this real story about Roger Ramey, that he knew it was a ET craft, and then they concatenated the balloon story. But when his widow was interviewed, she wouldn't say anything about it. So, you know, it was hearsay, but nonetheless, you hear so much of that, you got to believe that something out of the ordinary did happen there. But again, in my mind, I've never seen any compelling physical evidence that would prove that extraterrestrial spacecraft crashed there.
Mm-hmm. Are you going to be at any of the conferences or any of the UFO events that they have going on?
Well, I plan on going to the Mutual UFO Symposium next summer, and it's going to be in Denver. That's in August. That was recently been announced. It's on my website. I try to keep this. Sometimes I go to the International UFO Congress in Laughlin, Nevada. That's a very good conference. You know, I don't go to all of them, but I go to a couple, two or three a year. I spoke at the International UFO Symposium in San Jose this year, had a short speech along with Ken Cherry, who's the director of the Mutual UFO Network for the state of Texas. And by the way, we got another wave of sightings down there. Happened,
I was just going to ask you about that.
About a week ago, and I've been working on getting radar data from the FAA, and I've actually got an animation on my website of a sighting in that area that what this person saw. A lot of the sightings are very similar, and apparently there's a lot of video evidence this time. So I think we're going to be able to put a stronger case together once we get all the data in.
That's kind of neat. Now, one of the things, if somebody happened to be glancing into the sky and they possibly see a UFO, to distinguish between a UFO and an airplane, how would a normal everyday person do that?
Well, sometimes they can be confused. I mean, I think a lot of sightings that I get are conventional aircraft. First off, at night, immediately your perception is substantially reduced. The visibility's lower, and you know, you can't see. And of course, red light, green light, and white light flashing are typical of conventional aircraft. There's a red light in one wing, green light on the other, and another light on the fuselage close to the landing gear. And so that's difficult. And in the daytime, even if an aircraft is at a long distance on a sunny day, it can appear like a silver orb. I saw an airplane land here. I live along the west coast here in Ocean Shores, Washington, and I saw an airplane land at Holcomb Airport, which is 20 miles away, and I could see the sun shining off this thing. It looked like a silver orb. So, yes, many times it's difficult to distinguish. But a great bulk of nighttime sightings, if the proper data was available, could be explained. Many of them are celestial phenomena. Stars and planets, in particular, when they get low on the horizon, they attenuate through the atmosphere. They'll flash. They'll look larger. People look at it through a telescope and they say, oh, this got multiple flashing lights on it, when in fact it's just one object. Meteors, iridium flare satellites will flash 3 or 4 seconds very brightly and then disappear. Other satellites will disappear halfway over, you know, even before they go over the horizon when they get in the Earth's shadow. And so there's, you know, when I question a witness, you know, I get right to the grit of what I need to know. And if somebody tells me something's moving at right angles and going across the sky, then I take note. But I'm not trying to create an impression that I disclaim all nighttime sightings. I don't. I mean, I've had some very compelling ones. But what I'm saying is that a lot of them are identifiable if the appropriate data were available.
Also on your website, you have more, actually. On October 28th, you have one in Utah, and November 1st, which is just yesterday,
That's right. You have
another one in Utah.
That's right. Could they be related? Well, yes, they both happen near Hill Air Force Base. In one case, I got photos, and the other, I don't, but the sightings are similar. Yeah, I mean, I did notice that, and, you know, I always encourage people when they read my reports, you know, if they saw something, to file a report, because I'm always looking for corroborating evidence. In the Utah case, particularly the one on October 28th, there were a lot of people pulled off on Highway 89 looking at this thing, and it was descending, whatever it was. And I did an analysis on that photo, and I just, you know, it could be explainable, but I don't know what it is. And the other sighting, I believe the object was, I'd have to look at my report, was moving south, but it was moving from Hill Air Force Base. So Hill is a major Air Force base, and there's a lot of equipment out there. So whether it was something to do with the base, perhaps, you know, I don't know. But, yeah, those sightings could, even though they were a few days apart, somewhat indicative that something is going on. Maybe they're moving some equipment, you know, and people are starting to see this.
Mm-hmm. A lot of the people who are, that I know, that are in the metaphysical world like myself, have been talking about more sightings coming in. In fact, they, on some of their sites, they give out different dates. And Sienna, I don't go with the different dates things because I don't predict stuff like that. But I do believe that there's going to be more and more sightings, because it appears that there people are either more aware of it now, they're not as afraid to report it, or people are just basically waking up. I don't know which it is, but I would think because of those three, you know, just those three things, that I would think that there will probably be more and more claims of UFOs. Would you think that that might be true?
Well, possibly. You know, on my site, I have been getting more reports lately, and we're getting more periods of waves of sightings, and a sighting wave is a concentration of sightings both spatially and temporally. For example, Stevensville, Texas, we had some in Southern California on New Year's Eve. There were a lot of them on the 4th of July this year, and no, they weren't all fireworks. They were due to people looking at the sky, because looking at fireworks, that fireworks are over. Whoa, what's that? You know, people are out barbecuing. But as to, you know, the future, will there be more sightings? I don't know. I mean, I do have witnesses that claim to have contact with otherworldly beings, and it may or may not be true, and that they're saying, you know, more will be revealed. I don't know. I mean, I hope so. I know that, you know, I do get asked the question, well, when is the government ever going to disclose UFOs? Well, it's probably not going to happen until there's just an ubiquitous type phenomenon where they really threaten airspace, and it's just pretty widespread. Then you'll probably see a disclosure, you know. And allegedly, there's been some near disclosures, one by President Eisenhower, another one by President John F. Kennedy. But, you know, again, that's all hearsay. But so I don't know. You know, I hope so. But it does seem like we are getting a lot more waves of sightings. And this has happened historically, too. I mean, the summer of 1947, there were, you know, in the months of July and August, there were just a phenomenal number of daytime flying disc sightings. I mean, it was just unbelievable. And then they all of a sudden dropped off. 1957 was a wave year. 1952, that was a year that there was sightings near over the White House. 1965, the 66 over Michigan, the swamp gas sightings. Of course, that's a joke in itself. And then the sightings up Exeter, New Hampshire. 1973, wave of sightings, some abduction cases. Travis Walden incident happened around that time. The Pascagoula, Mississippi case happened around that time. So, you know, the wave, type phenomenon, you know, is continuing to this day, but I think maybe we're seeing more of them. And one thing to remember, too, is we have a lot more technology now. I mean, people got cell phones with video cameras on them, and we got the internet, you know, and there's just a lot of technology out there. That's the good news. The bad news is it's much easier to propagate a hoax nowadays, too, but, you know, the good news is that we're gonna see more of it, and you know, it just is at the whim of an investigator to be able to filter that out. So I just, you know, I couldn't speculate on the future. Maybe, you know, you're a psychic. You know, maybe you have some more insight than I do on that.
Oh, believe me, I get a lot of info, and I believe that there's going to be more, mostly because everything appears to be changing, number one. People are beginning to wake up. There, you know, intuitiveness is getting stronger. We're going through a lot of different energies here that would help us to either understand the phenomenons better, or it would make at least our minds, you know, open up more so that when something like that does occur, we don't just automatically shut it down saying people are going to think we're nuts, because that's what a lot of people do. So to me, there's going to be more. And at some point in time, the government itself is not going to really be able to deny it because there's going to be so many.
That's,
you know,
right.
So it's going to be happening. And like you said, it's just going to take people to keep saying it and keep saying it. And, you know, and if they keep saying it long enough, somebody has to start to listen, even though they may not want to.
Right.
The other thing that I found on your website that I listened to was the pilots talking to the control tower as they were coming in about a strange object that they were seeing, three of them, but they didn't show up on any kind of radar.
Right. I've got so many sightings on there. I'm not sure exactly which one you're alluding to, but, you know, you're getting it right from the horse's mouth. I think that case probably was the one near Omaha, Nebraska. where it was our Northwest Airlines crew. They had these discs out ahead of them at what we would call a 12 o'clock position, and they saw them, and you know they didn't know what they were, and I did a number of filters analysis looking for bright planets and everything, and I didn't see anything that would cause four objects to show up like that. I believe there were four at one time. And the radar that I looked at didn't show anything compelling, but there was some what we call fast walker returns, which they skirt across the radar scope, and you don't know whether it's the same blip from the same object or whether it's what we call an angel, but there were some of those in the area of the sighting. And the interesting part of that case was that NORAD, that sighting was reported to NORAD, and when I called them, they said they didn't know anything about it. So already they lied. They did get a report. And then what they did tell me, and I got to give them credit for that, is on the next day, they did exercises in South Dakota and Southern Canada. Now, there were some sightings that same night in Southern Canada. I believe it was towards Toronto or Montreal where the sightings were. Ottawa, I think, is where they were. Similar objects. And NORAD, those exercises are scrambles where they, you know, they're practicing. So did that have anything to do with these sightings? South Dakota was pretty close to where the sightings were. I don't know, but I found it to be interesting. I mean, again, I'm just trying to connect dots here, but I believe that's the case you're talking about. And yeah, the pilots were pretty clear about that incident. You know, they didn't know what it was, and they reported that case to the National UFO Reporting Center, and subsequently they forwarded it to NARCAP, and then I found out about it, and I wrote a Freedom of Information request for the voice tapes and the radar data. And I thought I was going to get to interview the pilot crew, because I know a pilot from Northwest, but they didn't want to talk, so you have to respect their anonymity, because bad things happen to pilots that talk about UFOs.
I'm sure that's true. Yeah, the one that you're talking about, the one from Nebraska, is true. The one thing because I listened to the whole thing, they
right.
gave out a website where
right.
a pilot could go claim what he saw.
Right.
Okay.
That was the National UFO Reporting Center site.
Can anybody go click on that website and find out anything?
Well, I'm the one that did the analysis of that report. I have more information in that report than anybody else does. I'm the one that analyzed it.
Okay.
I would encourage any pilots that see UFOs to report them to me. I mean, I'm going to definitely guarantee them anonymity, but that's a website. I believe what happened is that the pilot asked the air traffic controller for a website, and the controller gave it to him, but it was actually the air traffic controller that reported the sighting. It wasn't the pilot.
Right.
The controller reported the sighting.
Yeah, because when I was listening...
The exchange.
Yeah, the pilot was telling him, and the controller was talking to somebody else, telling him what the pilot was telling him. And he came back because whoever the control person was talking to, they gave him the website the pilot could go to and make a statement.
Right.
And
he didn't do it. No, the pilot didn't do it. The controller is the one that did it. But I know what exchange you're talking about. And that was a National UFO Reporting Center site. And, you know, that's what. But anyone, you know, am I answering your question, number one?
Yes.
Okay.
Sure.
I just want to be sure that I was fully answering what you were saying. But that's what happened. But, you know, I don't get a lot of pilot sightings, but we really encourage pilots to come forward, particularly the earlier the better, because the FAA recycles their data every 2 weeks because they get a monumental amount of radar records on a tape, and they can't afford to store it. And if there's a Freedom of Information request or an accident, they retain the data. I've had, in my last FAA radar request. I had over a million radar records in one file that I had to separate out. You talk about looking for needles in a haystack.
I did it a lot.
Absolutely. I'd like to say that's what I get paid for, but I don't get paid. Actually, I did work for the History Channel this year for the UFO Hunter series. I would encourage your listeners to tune in every Wednesday night to the History Channel and watch this season. It's going to be an exciting season. I'll be on a couple of episodes in the future, but I did a lot of work for them on those episodes, and they put a lot of effort into that.
Do you know what dates that you're going to be on?
I don't for sure. No.
Okay.
They got 13 episodes for this season. I believe the dates are on their website, History Channel website, but I don't recall. I think I'll be on in December, but I don't recall the specific dates. I'll have it on my website when I see it, or the cases that I'll be on. They gave him the names of them, but they've changed the names of them, so I have to kind of read between the lines to see, what one did I work on, so.
We're almost out of time, William, and I'm sorry because I still have lots of questions, so we'll have to bring you back on again. But could you do me a favor and give out an email address if you want people to email you or
sure.
Your website again, too, please?
Sure. My email address is just wpuckett, that's WPUCKETT, at UFOSNW.com. And the website is just www.ufosnw.com. And if you can't find me, just put UFOs Northwest in Google, and I'll come up. And I've got a lot of information I'm going to be posting. I've got a backlog as I speak to you. I'm looking at about 40 cases that I don't have up there yet. I'll be putting some more photos up there. And I'm expecting to get these samples from Texas that I'll be sending out to get analyzed. When I get the report from the chemist, I'll put it out there. And, of course, your niece. I'm looking forward to talking to her and perhaps developing some insight into that case. So that's how people can get a hold of me. They can call me at 360-289-2003. I do prefer emails over phone calls, but, you know, I have voicemail, and I do respond sometimes on a delayed basis because I am very busy. And there's only, like I say, there's only 24 hours in a day. So
that would be true. Well, anyway, I'm encouraging all you that are listening to go check out the website for sure because there's a lot of stuff on there. Really, the pictures on there, they are worth looking at because they're kind of hard to debunk those pictures that are on the website. So that's what I'm encouraging all you that are listening who have any interest in UFOs whatsoever, to check out the website, UFOSNW.com. And, William, it has been great having you on my show.
I've enjoyed it myself, and I look forward to talking to you in the future.
Well, we're going to do that. It probably won't be until, like, after the first of the year because I got a lot of others. But by then, you're going to have a lot more information and probably a lot
Absolutely.
More exciting. And I will have my niece get in touch with you, okay?
Okay. Nice chatting with you. Have a good evening.
Thank you, too. Thanks very much. I'd like to thank you, the listeners. I hope you enjoyed the show tonight. May God bless all of you. Have a great week, and take care. Bye now.